We read the Lord of the Rings mostly from the perspective of the members of the Fellowship, but what was Sauron's perspective on what happened? What did he know, when did he know it, and what did he do about it? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover the Lord of the Rings in nerdy detail, as well as A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. If you're new to the channel, welcome. Reading The Lord of the Rings with an eye to Sauron's perspective is a sobering business. Sauron is not just a two-dimensional bad guy. There's a lot going on there, and you can't fully understand his actions in the story without understanding a bit about his background and what he'd been doing before the story started. Let's start with the build-up to the War of the Ring. For most of the Third Age, Sauron was lying low, rebuilding his strength as the Necromancer in Dol Guldur in South Mirkwood. The problem was that he didn't have the One Ring anymore. He had poured so much of himself into that ring that, without it, he lost for a long time his ability to form a physical body. Gandalf and the Wise eventually worked out that he was there at Dol Guldur and finally chased him out in the year 2941 of the Third Age. That's around 78 years or so before the main events of The Lord of the Rings. He headed back to Mordor, which had been prepared for him by the Nazgul, and declared himself again 10 years later. He hadn't been doing nothing during those long millennia of the Third Age, though. His focus had ever been on finding and reclaiming the Rings of Power, particularly the One Ring, and destroying the heirs of Elendil, his nemesis. He may not have been able to do all of this personally, but he had plenty of minions to do it for him. The Witch King, the leader of the Nazgul, played a huge role during that time, destroying the northern kingdom of Arnor and hugely weakening the southern kingdom of Gondor. Sauron's presence alone seems to have slowly turned Greenwood the Great into Mirkwood, and his growing strength, the finding of the One Ring by Gollum, and the ongoing effect of the Seven Dwarf Rings seems to have roused evil across the land. The Balrog in Moria, the dragons in the north, particularly Smaug, and the goblins in the Misty Mountains. Saruman was also slowly falling. He was searching for the One Ring for himself for many years, and in the year 3000 of the Third Age, he started using the Orthanc Stone, the Palantir, and Sauron used that as an opportunity to ensnare him. The leader of the White Council of the Wise corrupted. As a result of all this, as the events of The Lord of the Rings started, Sauron will have thought that he was in quite a strong position. The elves were much diminished. Their numbers had been falling steadily as they departed for the west. Humans were divided, and the noble inheritance of Numenor had been watered down. The heir of Isildur, if there even was still an heir of Isildur, was long since vanished. Saruman was compromised, the blue wizards fallen, the dwarves were a shadow of their former strength after repeated dragon, goblin, and Balrog attacks, and his own forces had been building up year after year in Mordor and to the east and south. Yes, Sauron will have been feeling very confident. Granted, the One Ring was still out there somewhere, and he still had enemies, but his army was stronger than them, and time was on his side. And he gained a crucial lead to where the ring might be when Gollum, instinctively drawn by Sauron's presence — Sauron was, of course, of the same essence as the One Ring, remember — snuck into Mordor and was captured. Under torture, Gollum screamed out the words Baggins and Shire. These words meant nothing to Sauron, but he had a cunning plan. He released Gollum. We find out why in the Book of Unfinished Tales. Sauron perceived the depth of Gollum's malice towards those that had robbed him, and guessing that he would go in search of them to avenge himself, Sauron hoped that his spies would thus be led to the ring. I do wonder whether there's also an element here of Sauron as a Maiar sensing that Gollum had a role to play in the future of the ring. Gandalf had that same sense, after all. Sauron may not have known that Gollum would accidentally fall into the cracks of doom while holding the ring, but he did know that Gollum would never give up trying to get the ring, and would never intentionally destroy it. Anyway, it's clear that Sauron's priority now was to get the ring. He knew it was out there somewhere in the world, and events were starting to move quickly. Perhaps counterintuitively, his first move was to attack Osgiliath, the ancient capital of Gondor. He wasn't intending to provoke a full war at this point, but it served his purposes to test Gondor's defences and secure a route across the Anduin River. Sauron was surprised by the strength of Gondor's defences, which probably delayed the start of the war proper by a few months while he built up his forces even further. But the other reason for this sortie was to keep everyone thinking that his focus was on the environs of Mordor, disguising the fact that he then sent out the 9 Nazgûl to search for the One Ring. The Nazgûl were his most trusted and most dangerous agents, which shows how important he thought that mission was. But it's worth noting that although some of the wise noted what was going on, to the general population they were just black riders undercover. This was a secret mission. To be fair to the Nazgûl, they were pretty effective in this mission. There's an argument that if they had been sent just a day earlier, they would have succeeded. That's how close they got. En route to the Shire, they also managed to discover that Saruman was not as loyal to Sauron as he pretended, and on the 23rd of September 3018, they discovered and entered the Shire itself. The next few days are a matter of being always just a few hours or minutes behind Frodo and co, and it's worth giving a shout-out here to my favourite triumvirate of underrated heroes in this story. Farmer Maggot, Fredegar Bolger, and Barlumen Butterbur, who, each in their own ways, told the Nazgûl to be off to their face. They each deserve a medal. Sauron, it should be said, didn't know anything about this at the time. Contrary to what you may think, he seems not to have been in constant telepathic communication with them. Indeed, he resorted to sending a messenger to them at one point. But the Nazgûl were doing a reasonable job. They finally caught up with the Ringbearer at Weathertop, must have thought that they had the victory when they stabbed Frodo with the Morgul blade, but Glorfindel, Aragorn's bravery and Elrond's magic won through. The Black Riders were washed away, and at an unknown date later, they arrived back at Mordor and reported to Sauron. This left Sauron with a big strategic decision to make. He knew the One Ring had arrived in Rivendell and that it had been in the possession of the Hobbit, but now, who knew where it was? Tolkien is really perceptive in his character-driven narrative here. Sauron was always convinced that our heroes would try to use his ring against him. Why wouldn't they? It was so powerful. The idea that they might want to destroy it never really crossed his mind. Sauron simply couldn't conceptualise someone not wanting to take power when it was within their grasp. So Sauron's focus was on preventing them using it against him, rather than preventing them from destroying it. Anyway, the Fellowship set out from Rivendell a couple of months later. There's a hint that Sauron may have been behind the snowstorm when the Fellowship tried to cross the Misty Mountains. I know the movies were clear it was Saruman, but the books suggest it was either Sauron or the anthropomorphised mountain Caradhras. Personally, I do like the idea that it was Sauron. Gandalf definitely thinks it is possible, and it would make strategic sense for him to cut off the west of Middle-earth from the east, buying himself some time. Although, on a more practical level, the Fellowship trying to cross a high mountain range in mid-January? That's asking for trouble. But during this time, Sauron doesn't know where the ring is exactly. It got to Rivendell, that much he does know, and then what? He is convinced that anyone who got their hands on it would try to use it against him, and he has learned that his erstwhile ally Saruman is not quite as loyal as he had thought, so what does he do? He could send the Nazgûl back out again, but any idea that they might be incognito black riders has now gone, so he instead gives them improved flying steeds and keeps them closer to home to command his army when it went into the field against Gondor. And he sends out orc warbands to hunt for the ring. The fight between the orcs and the Uruk-hais over Merry and Pippin was this, Sauron's own forces not trusting Saruman's. There's a complex game of bluff and double bluff going on here. Sauron knew that Saruman wasn't really on his side, but Saruman didn't know that Sauron knew, so both sides carried on for a while as if everything was okay. Sauron then seems to have been jogged into further action by a couple of hobbits doing rather rash things. First, in escaping Boromir, trying to take the ring, Frodo put it on. Fair enough, but he then sat down in an ancient stone chair at the top of Amon Hen. It was an ancient seat of far-seeing, and he gazed right at Mordor. The eye of Sauron searched for him, but Frodo took off the ring before he could be spotted. Sauron knew then that something was happening. Someone had put on the ring, but not exactly who or where. Then, less than 2 weeks later, Pippin gazed into the Orthanc stone, the palantir that Saruman had had, and Sauron saw him. Sauron knew that a hobbit had the One Ring, and knew that Saruman was searching for the One Ring, and now he saw a hobbit at Orthanc, so the logical conclusion was that Pippin was the ring-bearer, or was a prisoner of Saruman, who now had the One Ring himself. A day later, Aragorn used the same Orthanc stone, and as before, Sauron was on the other end of the line. The two of them had a battle of wills, and Aragorn revealed his identity to Sauron, showing him Elendil's sword that had cut the One Ring from Sauron 3 millennia earlier and was now reforged. The meaning was clear. In Isildur's hands, that sword had defeated him. Now Aragorn had had it reforged so it could be used again. To Sauron, this was tantamount to a declaration of war. Sauron now will have been desperately trying to put these pieces of the jigsaw together. A hobbit had the ring. He was at Orthanc, and so was Isildur's heir, who was now out of the blue challenging him. Surely this meant that the One Ring was now with Aragorn, Isildur's heir, and Aragorn's show of bravado suggested that he was already falling into the ring's power. The logical place for Aragorn to go if he did want to challenge Sauron was Minas Tirith, the capital and main stronghold of Gondor, and sure enough, he did go there. Sauron was not the kind of person to just sit around and wait for his enemies to get into position, though. He set to strike immediately. The attack was no rushed offensive, though. It had been years in the planning. In particular, Sauron had sought to undermine Gondor's defences by weakening Denethor's resolve through the Palantiri, showing him quite how unopposable Mordor's forces were. That's why Denethor took his own life as the siege was starting. Sauron had made him think that victory was impossible. But for the arrival of our heroes, Gondor would have been thrown into disarray and despair by the untimely death of its leader. March the 10th was the dawnless day. Darkness had spread from Mordor, the Black Gate opened, and the Witch King of Angmar led forth the Morgul host. Elsewhere, armies attacked Lothlorien, Mirkwood, and Rohan to keep Gondor's potential allies busy. He sent forces to seize the crossings over the Anduin, and another to guard the main road from Rohan to Gondor. The corsairs of Umber were raiding the south coast of Gondor as well, preventing Minas Tirith from calling all its banners. Sauron was taking no chances. The Battle of the Pelennor Fields itself was a pretty close-run thing. With the help of Grond, the great battering ram, and fronted by the Witch King, Sauron's forces breached Minas Tirith's walls within hours. Then Rohan came to Gondor's aid, and Aragorn attacked from the south. Both of those things shouldn't have happened from Sauron's perspective. He was not to know that Theoden would strike a deal with the Woses to take a shortcut through their forest, or that Aragorn would go through the Paths of the Dead and recruit a ghostly army to scare off his allies. He also wasn't to know that a hobbit would be on the field of battle with an ancient enchanted blade and a fierce female warrior to vanquish the Witch King. But for all that, from Sauron's perspective, the loss didn't actually matter. Aragorn had been flushed out, Gondor's defences crushed, and only a remnant of Gondor and Rohan's combined army survived. And Sauron had an even larger host back in Mordor. Any lingering doubt he might have had about Aragorn having the One Ring was eliminated when Aragorn, inexplicably and rashly as far as Sauron could see, took that much-depleted army and marched on Mordor. Surely only a madman or one driven mad for power by the One Ring would try something so foolish. Now, around this time, Frodo was stung by Shelob and captured by the orcs of Cirith Ungol. His mithril shirt, elven cloak, and Sam's shortsword were taken and shown to Sauron, which prompts some to wonder how Sauron didn't then realise what was going on. But again, from Sauron's perspective, he has found a hobbit who conspicuously didn't have the ring. Remember, Sam took it, and had heard reports of a mighty elf warrior, for that's how Sam appeared to them. The obvious conclusion, given by now he's convinced that Aragorn has the ring, is that these are spies. Anyway, Aragorn soon has his attention by marching on Mordor. As far as Sauron is concerned now, this is just a matter of defeating that army, reclaiming the One Ring from Aragorn's dead body, and all Middle-earth would be at his mercy. He tries a little diplomacy before the end, sending the mouth of Sauron to try to persuade Aragorn to just give up. But he didn't care whether it worked or not. Aragorn's force was outnumbered 10-1. The climax of The Lord of the Rings feels therefore like grasping victory from the jaws of defeat. Gandalf and Aragorn were very clear that they were probably riding to their deaths. But for Sauron, it was the other way around. As his forces surrounded Aragorn's, he will have felt that victory was finally his after 3,000 years of waiting and planning. The heirs of Elendil will be finally vanquished and the ring his once more. Sauron will have been savouring his victory. Sending the mouth of Sauron out was surely as much about gloating and taunting as it was trying to give Aragorn a way out of a battle he would surely lose. Sauron was toying with his enemy. And then he senses the ring being put on in Mount Doom, and everything changes. He issues a last-gasp order to the Nazgul to fly back and help. They wheel around on their fell beasts and make for Orodruin, but it is too late. Panic, fear, desperation, and then finally destruction. For just a few moments or minutes before the ring was destroyed, Sauron knew that he had been wrong. Not everyone would want to use the ring for their own power and glory. Yes, Frodo succumbed at the very, very end, but he and Sam made it that far, and fate or providence or the intervention of Uru himself did the rest. Some people are capable of selfless and purely good acts. It wasn't just Sauron who fell. It was his entire worldview. Hope and love and care and friendship can triumph over evil, however powerful it may seem at the time. If you'd like to see more videos diving deep into the world of The Lord of the Rings, there's a playlist on the left of your screen now. Or to support this channel, the best way to do that is via my Patreon page. There's a link appearing now on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.